I don't really think about it on the order I'm going to read, but I'm just saying which items are on the agenda. I'm going to deliberate on the customer resourcing. I'm going to deliberate on the second and fifth. I'm going to deliberate on the shelter. By consensus and so by our bilaterals between myself and the Department of Justice and the Office of the State Law Advisor, they agree that the second hand could be we can deal with it later. But now what I'm proposing is that we straight away zoom to the child justice. If they are the defensive department that we are in. Thank you. It's in Setsa who?
It's in Teto Mkoni.
Which is the name? Which is the name?
Mteto is the name, and Mkoni is my surname.
Okay. Because we are used to Mteto to be a surname, but I understand. Thanks. Welcome. Of the two entities on the child justice and the customary bill, I can see everybody's here. I wanted to go check through the child justice. Some of our members will join us at the business of other meetings. But the Honorable Leroux, as you might have noticed, he's not feeling well. He's trying to recuperate. He said that if he's been strong enough to join us. But if you don't see him, it's not that he's trying to avoid sitting here, but he's not feeling well. You might have noticed, but there's a bout of flu. I wonder if there's any volunteer with a doctor here who can assist. Yeah. On the child justice, we asked relevant questions a day before yesterday. And I remember the talk had some questions that she asked. Also, I can't remember that they had to be answered. And what we'll do, I'll check if members want to ask some questions. Because what I intend doing today is for us to read the motion of desirability so that we can formally deal with the bill clause by clause. Because my intention is that we should vote on the bill tomorrow. Read the motion today. We deal with a few questions. We make those proposed amendments. We send the department packing to go and deal with those amendments. Bring them tomorrow, then we vote on the bill. I can assure you, tomorrow we're going to vote on the bill and pass it. Now, that's the good news I'm going to give to you. But the intent is to reciprocate. That was the commercial break, colleagues. Now, if you're ready for questions for clarity, colleagues, let me allow this to happen. Then from there, I'm going to request that we go through the motion. Now, my secretary just advising me that that yesterday I pressed her on something, but I don't see what it is. So that's when you said, no, chapter, yesterday you impressed me on some assessment for public consumption. Colleagues, let me open the floor for us to have questions to the department on child justice. And I suspect it won't be long on child justice because one who gives this department to go and work. So when they come to us tomorrow with the proposed amendment that we're going to give them, at least the way they clean up all the things that need to be attended to. Doc, you're the first one on the floor.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you. You referred to me having certain questions. I did go through my documentation in connection with the questions that I put yesterday in my office, so I will waive that that question. It's no longer necessary to answer that question. And I will, as we go then through it, and I think many of my questions that I had the previous occasion were satisfactorily answered by the department. And yes, I think we can move on this at this stage, given for us. But I'm concerned in any case, I do not have any further questions. The questions that I put was answered, and those that were not answered, I went and acquainted myself about the situation. I remember I asked some questions about the Criminal Procedure Act. I did go to that act. I did go to the minority judgment in the Constitutional Court. I will not use the time of the commission. I'm satisfied about the answer that was given. Thank you.
Thank you very much. There are two members who asked questions, but they are not here. I just hope when they arrive, I'll still be in this nice mood. Because, you know, it's like a Cape weather, it just seems like. So that's the end, Karim. At some point, I'll ask you to brief us as to how was yesterday. Don't you think later, don't you? If someone has delivered, system knows he has delivered. But if he has failed this man, system is free to say this. All right. Any general questions from you, Darren? Not today.
Not today,
actually. Mami Anda? Okay. The student looking that side, you know. Someone's afraid you might be embarrassed. I can see that the student will not be serious. By the way, you said, is there any reason why I was not defining guardian as a separate this thing, a definition? Even though it's included in the prophet adult, but is there any reason why it can't be defined a guardian? Just to the key, that's define a guardian. That's to remove all the ambiguity. Is there any reason why I'm not doing it?
Yeah, I think what we could do is put a definition of guardian in and refer to the guardians defined in the Children's Act, and we just make a reference to the act. I think that might be a good idea.
Now, if we agree, then just note it for us. You go ahead and do it for us. Can someone check wish? Or can you check and go and call one of the men? Because I want them to come to us the way. I want us to move with speed because unfortunately my team is depleted. I can't move now. And then, Mr. Magnolsi, please. I suspect he's in his office. but don't leave in time, but we'll... Okay. No, I'll put it again. Before we go to... Because I wanted to go to do a formal, the formal part, but I'll wait until my team is done. I have to make sure I do the right thing. Before I go to plus two, is there anything you want to address as on the definition of the department? I tell the department to go and look at the terminology of the conference thing. What do you call this thing? Family group conference. Can you address us on that one? What's your view about that?
I've drafted a note that has been distributed, but I'll ask her just to take you through the note.
Because as I just pointed out, conference means connotations in our South African context. So what could be a possible suggestion, bearing in mind that it's not going to be the principle that is going to, your offense is not the principle that really the terminology. Well, what could be a possible suggestion in view of the fact that this is an internationally now used term?
Yeah, in our culture, don't ask a horse a question. I understand you, Sharon. That's why I throw it to you. I thought you'd come with some options of see how, which term they will use that would be most suitable to our situation. Yeah. Because even if it's used somewhere, but rarely, it must be understood and be attractive to our situation in South Africa. I don't have any proposal to make now, but I know I rely on the team, on my left, to come with few options. To see. If you can get any option, then I want to go to the conference thing. I don't like it, I must be honest. But only the terminology. Only the terminology. Honorable Guru.
Chair, can we brainstorm maybe to give the department, let's say, if something like Imbevo, if they can, I hope you understand the term of Imbevo, if we can have something like that, Imbevo something, but concerning the two families.
Yeah, maybe people will be stretching it too far. You know? That is the big thing. Or something that will have to do with the reconciliation, something, or restorative, whatever. You know, a term that shows that the victim and the offender and that term are coming together to you to restore peace or sort of. I don't see reintegration. I don't have any proposal to make now. But I think we're going to do it right. Let's brainstorm and see if we can come with a better.
How about you taking out the conference and leave the family group?
Yeah, isn't it must show that it's coming together of all relevant parties. The purpose thereof is make peace, you know. So if you leave at a conference, it might not have the same meaning. You know, it might be just there. But I think let's leave them. I think these people are so told enough that they can assist us as a police. And no. Teresa and Maureen, I think they also assist in calling us from them. And just sit here. Okay. Yeah, or if all of you fail, and then request Madame Gop to come up with a name. Whatever name she'll come up with, it must be acceptable to all of you. Because, yeah. Good. Can we proceed? Let me check. Is there any other thing that you want to clarify from the question that you raised earlier on the past 2 weeks that you think you want to clarify to us? Because I'm just applying brakes. So from here, I'm going to use the speed of the chair, the fighting chair. I mean, the department, is there anything I got to clarify before we.
I don't think anything specific from outside, Chair. There were a few questions that were raised at our last meeting. I don't know whether we did try and respond to those. I don't know whether we need to go back to those. There was the one question that Dr. Van Heerden asked about the controlling bodies, but I get the impression that that has been addressed. I think that I'd like to think that we've answered all the questions that have been raised.
Right. In my opinion, I think it is now time for us to pass on the of disability. Because as far as I'm concerned, it is desirable in this parliament that we pass this motion, that we pass this bill, and the bill is urgent so that we enable to give a space to the relevant department to go and put things that would make it easy for the bill to be implemented. As you're aware, the bill will be coming to effect or be implemented in 2010, to be specific. So before that happens, there is a lot that must happen. I think that must be done by relevant departments. So, having said all that, I want to check if there any member who, in his or her opinion, feels the way I'm feeling that we can move to that direction. I will do it.
Thank you, Chair Patrick. I do move the motion of disability for this.
Any second? Honourable West?
Aye.
Thank you very much. That puts the bill formally before us now, and that we can now make those necessary proposals, colleagues. What I'm going to do, I want to check if members want us to give department some marching orders to go and clean up and do some harassment and come back to us. The outstanding one would be the group conference thing that they'll bring options to us tomorrow morning. But now I want to, because now I want us to go close by close, colleagues. If we adjourn somewhere, because there are two other things that we have to deal with today. But I'm not rushing you. Let me check if is there any member who wants to raise anything under definition. You recall that we gave the department to go and define a guardian. They'll come with it. We gave them some tasks to look into the family group conference to come with a better terminology. Now, under definition, is there anything you want to raise, colleague? No. Clause 2. Is there any member who wants to raise something under clause 2? I think it's clear. Let's go to clause 3. Now, under clause 3D, is the department ready to render all languages? Because I know in some other courts, some magistrates were complaining that unfortunately the interpreters were not enough. You find that, that there are four courtrooms, but they can only utilize two because of the availability or non-availability of interpreters. Have you addressed this now? Can we safely say this will happen? Because I'm looking at some other languages that are not among the 11. French-speaking Arab people who are sometimes that the case can't continue because there's no French interpreter in our country. A child must be appropriately addressed and speak in his or her language that he or she is comfortable with. I'm looking at things like sign language and some other languages. Are we ready for this? Can you cater for everybody who might need that service?
Yeah, I think we are. In fact, we do have all what we call common languages movement, because we don't get a case every day where somebody's speaking or the French or some of the different dialects of the different countries, in particularly in Africa. So we go beyond just the international languages, we go also on the continental languages. We do have the challenges sometimes that because somebody is not necessarily placed there, you might have a slight delay getting somebody speaking a particular language. If the delay goes on for much longer and it becomes unreasonable, usually the presiding officer will say it's gone on too long. And so either would draw in the best interest of what is there, provided the prosecution agrees. We have also increased our capacity on interpreters, partly also in line with coming up with the 2010 strategy, so that we have as many dialects, not just the main language group. So you will find sometimes that we would have somebody coming from a kind of example that I can remember very clearly. Somebody spoke a particular dialect of one of the Nigerian languages, which just slipped my mind. I think it's called this. I can't remember the name of the language, what they call it. And we were able to find an interpreter who could speak that particular language. Not to say, we make provisions with that first service for interpreters to be there, but where we do have challenges now and again, and then we address that as each matter comes forward. Over and above this basic interpretation, because interpretation usually is quite direct in terms of language, we've put in part of our training for our core personnel, particular interpreters, to also simplify the language. So interpretation just directly from one language to another is one point, but simplifying it so to be appropriate to the matter, the age of the child, is what we've included, and that is why you see also in the directive that you need to have that specific child justice process. We've been doing that not just for child justice, but we've already started the process also for sexual offences, but in our own languages, the vernacular, certain body parts, as an example, in a sexual offence matter, may mean different things, and the terminology may not necessarily get you the right type of evidence to secure the conviction. So those have been recognised and are already forming part of our new training packages for our core personnel.
Thank you. Can we now look at F. No. E. What do you mean by cultural value? When you treat this child, you must consider his or her cultural value. What do you mean? Can you explain this? If I had to refer, put it to me, you know, when I'm at home in the palace, they. If you come to the Matsivela Royal Council, you know, we are all we're now like a family because we've been together for the past 3 weeks. If you come to me, you greet me nice, but when I'm at home, you can just greet me just like that. There are people who must go through before you come to me. know, you might see that there is some Mukwena here, but you can't come. In fact, women and men, they will just stop you. They say, "Who dare you? Go to our host." Talk to him directly like that. That's my sister Marcella's little tale. But in cultural values, I don't know what I'm trying to prove here, what I'm saying. There's another thing that we're overlooking here. What I'm trying to address here.
Okay, it's exactly like that. As you said, children would never ask the social question in that environment. Yeah, I could, because it's a different environment. But it's exactly taking into account those type of value systems. So if one, as an example, gives you a sentence, like we were saying, and I think to bring in that whole point of family time, if that's not appropriate, take into account how you live in your cultural setup. So if you use another kind of situation where you would say in a rural area, certain people have following different practices as opposed to an urban setup. I wouldn't send a child who's living in a suburb to carry out the practice or a sentence which may be appropriate there in the urban setup. So it's urban, rural is also taking into account what practices and environments the child is managing. So during the day, the child may be going to, on a Sunday as an example, going to the church. And that is their religious conviction. And then you give them a sentence which may be contrary to that religious conviction. It would not be appropriate. That one would have to take into that account that child's environment. Over and above that, you would get other types of questions that are asked, especially knowing our whole system and where we come from historically. We have found you would get asked questions which may not necessarily be common in your understanding and common in your family setup or common in your cultural environment. So where you would address an elder, I think that's another good example, the way you'd address an elder person in a cultural environment is very different to the way you would address an elder in a Western environment. You'd use certain terminology, you wouldn't use certain terminology. So it's taking into account the child before you and not using the same formula and speaking to all children without assuming much for that. So I don't have those examples quite, you know, satisfactory for itself, but I think in the example you introduced the point is exactly that way one would, but one must also then know that special preferences won't necessarily be given. It would be within the context of the situation, but having regard to where what's the child's background. I think in all of our adversarial systems, it didn't matter what environment, what language you spoke, you would just process through one particular system. And this is really to recognize that our standards, our values in the family and community environment is so different as you move to different cultures and also race groups, if one must use that as a term. This is acknowledging that, those differences that we have.
Yep. Yeah. All right. From this.
No. I was saying that some of the examples is like in a Zulu culture, you can't come in the environment of a meeting with a cap, with your cap on. But with the other nations, you can come with a cap and it does not mean anything. But in a Zulu, they can say, we don't want even to talk about this person. If you just come with a cat in the presence of the elder.
Yeah, I think that's good, the method of that. That was clause 3. Can we go to clause 4? By the way, we said that if this child is arrested and he or she is... Is 14, and the case will drag on, and the child will be completed when the child is above 16. Or let's just use a very stupid example: the child is now 18 or 17, 18. But I said, how do you handle it? Do you categorize this kid as the one who is not capable to committed an offense. Oh, by the way, what did you say? I remember in your first briefing, you said something about the divorce. We wanted to check the whether if you are arrested and you are still in arrested age, that is, you are regarded as someone who is not capable of committing an offense. But the case will drag on until you have above that age. I want to check, by the way, there's a clause where we're dealing with this. I can't remember that. I want to just refresh my mind. Lauren?
Are you referring to, I think it is, the truth of criminal capacity, that children between that are 10 years and older, but under the age of 14, that's dealt with in clause 11, where the state is required to prove that a child in that age category has the necessary criminal capacity. And that's got to be proved during the course of the trial. Is that what you are referring to?
Partly, but it's where a child, you know, some cases can drag on and on and on. Like in two states in Virginia, where the child was there for more than 6 years now. And when the child was arrested, it was 13, 14 or something, I can't remember. When they told me, the boy said, now I was there for the past 6 years, I regard this place as my home. In that case, how do we treat the family? When people was arrested, didn't have that criminal capacity. But when you are now 17 or so, I mean, and older, I mean, you can now take responsibility of your head.
Here, there's two angles to that. The one part is, in our criminal law, criminal procedure, as is with this bill as well, is at the time, when it's very clinical with the response now, the time of the commission of the offence, everything about that trial or that process is about when the offence was committed. Now, that is the one part, and that's the more clinical response. We can't judge the person criminally through justice process 5 years later because they didn't commit the crime at that time. They committed it when they were the age of the chair, as it was noted. But there are two principles. The most important one that is in our constitution that all matters must be processed without delay. So I'm a little bit worried about this person who was there for 6 years and his trial hasn't been processed yet. It hasn't been complete. That by now ought to be should have been challenged. The other part is if you look at the principles under a guiding principle, which is under 3, F, all procedures in terms of this Act. So we've now amplified the constitutional principle, all procedures in terms of this Act should be conducted and completed without unreasonable delay. So the idea is that we process that matter as quickly as possible. From our recent cases, we had certain instances where trials would have been delayed for a range of reasons, but where it gets beyond being unreasonable now, the presiding officer must make his decision, or wherever we are in terms of this book, the different processes, there must be made a decision, and that's subject to review as to why it took longer than was expected. So one has to look at a range of factors to look at the issues of delay. I mean, if it's unreasonable, it must be challenged because the constitution is very clear. In terms of implementation, we have matters which are processed, especially with the children and also with the interim strategies in terms of our case flow. The children's matters where are also sexual offences particularly, we try and process, we put those as priority. There's a whole strategy in the department which I'm sure has come up through in our case, our oversight before this committee as well, to look at case flow management, which is dealt with by all the agencies of criminal justice. We have a tighter mechanism under the Intersectional Committee on Child Justice where we process the matters. So far, we've managed within a year to process matters. You do get the odd ones that go over, but usually we are very aware of it and we would know if there would be reasons for why that's taken up. And where that falls through the cracks, we always rely on the Child Justice Alliance telling us in court for those.
That takes us to clause 4. No questions. Clause 5. Talk to me, please, about the probation officer. Who must receive this child immediately? Yes,
the advocate and Master Lefele has assured us that definitely we are going to have these professional officers. So they've put their heads on the block.
Yeah, and they'll speak on the mic. That's it, Master Lefele, Kony, Bing, and advocate. The Lawrence and all of them, because they said no, this guy complained the history. Thank you very much. Yeah. I think you can call them very fast. Like, you know, they're speaking on the mic, you know, that's what they feel about it. They're being recorded. That was good. Yeah. Can we go to clause 6? Any questions, clause 6?
I'm saying here, not pushing. So if I could please say that soliciting the heads of the department, you know, we might get promoted, we might move on. So Connie, myself, Mr. Masilentela, may not be the ones here next time. So I just thought I'd put that. The department is committed.
Yeah, but this comes to promotion because after this bill is passed, I'm going to talk to the ministry so that they promote all of you who are dealing with this. They've been doing a very good job, but if you said but those who think and feel they don't deserve a promotion, please raise your hand so that I don't raise my hand.
Chair, if you could ask if I could have early retirement, I'm sorry.
Right, clause 6 for you. Clause 7. We argued whether that a child who is below 10, don't have a criminal capacity. I'm moving to close 8. Maybe it's it. We have debated a lot about some of these clauses. We're just making it clean up now so that when we put the whole bill, at least we just make it that they were still speaking the same language. I was disturbed this morning when the country are trying their best to resolve some other sensitive issues that might cause some tensions to the whole country. Someone said no, it has not agreed that there must be some political solutions to some issues. Some of the people, you know, when they're in their comfort zone, I think they must reserve some of those comments to themselves, because when we respond, they say we're attacking. I just wish this person didn't say what he said when I was interviewed. That was very silly. Very silly of you. Very silly. Welcome, dear. I apologize for starting before you arrived. I'm very sorry. I apologize. Welcome, dear. Honorable Beck.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know, but let me apologize for
for coming a bit late, but on Thursday there's a caucus in the Western Cape Legislature, and I'm not late, I was delayed over there. Thank you very much. Chair, on 8. Chair, on 8, just for interesting things, the review of the minimum age criminal capacity, well, I'm just now very inquisitive. It's, I've seen over the years, over many moons, in my days, I don't want to say I was less advanced, but children are much more advanced and tend to get more advanced as years go by. So will this review stay, come back again in future, in 2 or 3, 4 years, we have to review the age again? Or is there any space left? Or will it just become, or did I have another amendment? Again, in 2 or 3 years' time, we might say that children are now much more advanced, so the criminal age must, capacity must now come down, maybe to 10 years. A child at 10 or 8 might now have the capacity to commit a serious crime and take responsibility for it. I don't ever think that children here will tend, they will get more advanced as the years go by. So I see in future that the criminal capacity is coming down.
Well, Chair, this section 8 must be read with 96.4. And 96.4 raises the kinds of concerns, because thus far we've had, if you recall, our current situation is between 0 to 7, 7 to 14, it's been raised up to 10. But now the point of saying it must be reviewed is to identify those types of issues. And if you read section 96.4F, it says a recommendation based on the analysis, and of course the analysis would refer to all the points that have been noted under 4A to E, based on the analysis as to whether the minimum age of criminal capacity should remain at 10 years as provided for in Section 7.1, or whether the minimum age of criminal capacity should be raised. So it doesn't suggest raising or lowering, it suggests, based on the analysis, what is appropriate in the circumstance. Because I think, you know, society evolves. We all evolve as human beings. In the example that you raised, one has to, based on, and if you look at 4A, it's very, very specific. It says, we need you to collect statistics of children who are at 10 years at the time of the commission, 11, 12, 13. It then goes further to look at the sentences, the trial processes, how different matters, especially if you look at D, where the expert evidence was met, I'm speaking about 96.4D, and the outcome of each matter regarding the establishment of criminal capacity. So this is rather very specific on whether, on what information you must provide in the report that you would give to Cabinet, and table also, I think, before Parliament, and thereafter to Parliament for consideration on whether the minimum age must be raised. So if you read, I think that must be read in conjunction with Section 96.4. And to some extent, also, if you see, 96.5, which is what I pointed out now, that you've got to submit a report to Cabinet, and then we will then assess what is best for our country at that particular point in time. Because until you have something that is reviewing, it means you've got to then come up with a different type of amendment. It's very stringent as to how and what is required that will go into that report. Over and above that, remember, we've also got the National Policy Framework, which is under 96.4, which is 96.1A, the implementation of priorities and strategies in the National Policy Framework. So over and above that 5-year report, which is specific, you still have to look at the different aspects that is referred to under 96.1A until E. They also on the specific aspects I raised now under 4, to make a proper assessment. And we won't use the probation officer for that section.
I don't think we must have said it on the set over here, but that brings us to clause 9. Now, I'm having a problem. Can you please try to persuade me to not to argue this any further? I want a strong persuasion here. I'm having a problem. I know it's in our law that when a child has committed an offense, we always protect. We don't make his name or her name public to protect him because of the age. Regardless of the offense, no matter how serious, we always don't reveal the name and the age. Can someone try to convince me that we'll live with it until when? Let's protect this kid, but the one who commits serious offense, because of the age, we should protect the identity. Why are we doing this? Why are we still doing it? I know it's in our law, but is there any reason why are we doing this? I know we're trying to rehabilitate people to be better people, but some of us want to know. So that I know that if this kid one day come across this kid, the mall or wherever, I'm not sure that I play very far from them. Why are you still doing it? Is there any tangible reason why can't we reveal the idea?
That's been in our law from time immemorial. I think it was part of our common law, and it's now been entrenched in our Criminal Procedure Act 154. And basically, I'll have to go and do a bit of research and to come up with stronger arguments. But in short, it's just to protect children. I think internationally that's also done. What I want to just point out, Chair, and it's in the. In the law, in the portfolio committee's report, there was what was raised. Section 154(3) of the Criminal Procedure Act, as I said, prohibits the publication of any information which may reveal the identity of an accused person who is under the age of 18 years. But what seems to be happening in practice is once a child turns 18, then that information does often become public. I've tried to sort of summarise, but I can go back and I can try and that's basically what it's about. But I can come up with further details if I can just get my hands on it.
Yes, I'll room as usual. But I want, other than the age, what is this reason that the and then reveal the identity of the child. Other than the age, what is it? What are we protecting? What is it? You know, one day, in the city, you are deploying advocate Durant to be with the committee when you go to visit this place. It's always a part of us. At some point, I mean, I adopted him to part of the team of the committee. You know, it's always with us when we visit the committee. Remember, I think you must advise me one day where to invite all these kids, must accompany us when we go. So that they see these kids, and if you're told the kind of offense they've committed, so that you see, you know, and the feel of these kids. I mean, I'm trying to understand, really. What are you protecting here? What is the tangible reason, Herman? What is the reason why I'm protecting these people, you know, these kids who are so terrible. You know, what I will do is telling us of these boys who just came into the house and said, you know, well armed, you know, yeah, we'll deal with you and they stop what they're doing. You know, young kids, and they're well armed with kids. And they were protecting them, saying, no, they didn't. Why agree with the 10 years and, you know, whatever? It's fine. But those 14 years and whatever, other than those.
I think one of the reasons is that they belong to a vulnerable group. I mean, most of these kids, particularly those I was talking about, they were used by somebody, an elderly person who was using them to sell drugs and all that. So usually you find that they are being used by somebody else and they belong to a vulnerable group. I think those are the other reasons that exist.
Well said, Ben. I'm not convinced.
Yeah, I do agree with the Honourable Member that children are vulnerable categories. That's when we were ratifying the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and also when this Parliament was debating the inclusion of Section 28 in our Constitution, you will see that we went higher standards than the current international principles. If you look at the best interest principle, the current international standard is that the best interest of the child is a primary consideration. We in our country, in Section 28 of our Constitution, decided that because of the vulnerability of children and the kind of the plight of children in terms of how they enter also into our armed struggle at the time and the kind of protection that we need to give to them to ensure that they can grow up in a society where values prevail and eventually become productive citizens because of the dysfunctionality and all of the political elements and also just the way children were being treated, they were literally taking on the role of adults. We wanted to be very clear when we put that provision in the Constitution that those rights and responsibilities are taken into account and that we as a society, I think that's something our former president also points out, you judge a nation by the way it treats its children. And Section 28 as it stands in terms of the best interest principle now is that the best interest of the child is a paramount consideration, showing the importance that we have to place in that respect. Furthermore, if you look at the just the general preamble of this particular bill and also the objects of the Act under 2, you would see it says, apart from looking at respect, fostering a child's sense of dignity and worth, and also if you look at criminology principles and the study of those kinds of aspects in understanding criminal behavior, if a system, and I think we raised that in terms of some of the research, if a system treats children in a violent manner, those children stay within that cycle and then respond to every other action in a violent way. And I'm not necessarily speaking about physical violence, but violence from a state perspective. You saw the statistics that we had pointed out when you asked us what are some of the causes of crime. And you see the objects here go further, not just fostering the children's sense of dignity and worth, but providing for the special treatment of children in a child justice system designed to break the cycle of crime, which will contribute to safer communities and encourage these children to become law-abiding and productive adults. So also knowing that children as a category cannot raise their queries by themselves or their complaints, their level of maturity, which is different to ours as adults, are such that they don't always know what is best for them, and the system has to come and provide for them until they have remedied this particular type of behavior. And this bill also recognizes that you do get children who have been criminalized and demeaned predominantly by our system. Instead of demeaning and criminalizing further, let's find a way to break the cycle. And a last point here, I think why Mr. Durant has come with you on your older side is because he was the former chief director of vulnerable groups. So when you had invited at the time someone from the department, he would have been the obvious choice. But it does not assume that we haven't gone on oversight visits. I've only taken over from a year now since Mr. Durant has left the case of that seat for another chief director. And your committee, unfortunately, we have not gone with you on oversight. But we do go to the different provinces. So when we make some of these decisions, we have got that particular edge, or we rely on our other officials who are at the provincial level. We have so far, unfortunately, only, or fortunately for the post through your Committee on Justice, gone with them on some of the oversight, but we'll remedy that with this particular committee.
Can you please direct the food there on the list? Mm-hmm. On the list next time for the Parliament. Thank you very much for the answer. And I appreciate it. That will be good. This is the family message. Yeah, I think under clause 9.1, if we're going to define guardian, I propose that we'll bring this amendment. We'll add a C there, that this child will be handed over to the parents or an appropriate elder, then C will be guardian. We'll see how can we do it, and that's if you think it will be overkilling, it will be overdoing it. Please advise me accordingly.
Appropriate adult, hand the child over in B, if she's not parent, you hand over the child to a parent or an appropriate adult, and appropriate adult in the definition clause already includes a guardian.
Okay, if I may add, the current practice is that you will always be released into, that is why guardianship has been a legal process. You can be a guardian in the colloquial sense where you're taking care of a child, but there's a legal connotation to that. So when it's a formal legal process, the standard is the parent or the legal guardian, because the term is really a legal guardian, would be given into over their custody. We've expanded it by putting appropriate adults.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want a guardian there. If I'm going to define guardian, why can't we put it here? But the child is handed over to another, the parent, appropriate adult, guardian, whatever. Let's put it there. I know that I'm dealing with lawyers here, but this must be really friendly to Umam Kopo and Umam Kwen out there. Good. Can we? I'm moving, colleagues. Any questions with lost there? I move to clause 11, proof of criminal capacity. I don't want to argue this anymore. I've argued that my eyes are now blue. Yeah, I'm going to stop arguing. Let's just move to clause 12, but let's put it. I want to raise anything to clause 11. I'm not winning. Any questions to close 12? I'll raise a question about the age of the child. I'll raise it now for 15. I waive the clock, sir. Clock setting? You said that if you discover at some point that the child in fact is above the protected age limit, what are the recourses to rectify it? Let's say the child has been sentenced or whatever, but later discovered that the age was incorrect. What are we going to do? Sure. Not based on 16, because it is a normal error, but if it is proved that the child was hiding his or her age, what is the remedy to deal with this? We should just make sure that we put this child is through normal court processes as someone who is capable of committing an offense. Can you refresh my mind, please? Hello.
Chair, I think in broad terms, if it was thought that the child was a child and the child isn't a child, what's going to happen is that you'll continue with the proceedings, those criminal proceedings, but you won't apply this legislation, you'll apply the Criminal Procedure Act, and you'll just go from where you left off.
Now what I mean, Lauren, is that let's say you're done with this child in terms of this legislation, but at a later, after it's been sentenced and whatever, sent to wherever, it is discovered that not in fact that the child is cheated on us. He's above the age, was hiding at the exact age. Like what's happening in our soccer, you know, our soccer is in Canada, our soccer, where you have people who claim to be under 14, but this boy in fact is 17 years old. So, they're discovered when the team is now in the final. But after they've won, even a cup. And it's such a serious anomaly. You know our cock. Let's not say much because an Oklahoma fella is doing some of this. Yeah. What do you think of this company?
Chair, the general rules that leave you with a blank, because the matter would have been still set with, and so the most you could do at that point is have the matter reviewed. If the offence is so serious that it doesn't happen in practice, you could always go back and have the entire matter retried, depending on the gravity of the situation. But usually the review would then determine what ought to have been done. And then the presiding officer who is presiding over the review would then determine, usually looking at the balance, that triad of principles, how grave is the matter, and perhaps this matter would go back and start afresh, or we could make certain remedies as we went along. If you also look at section 16, 2 and 3, what this case is for here is more the child-friendly aspect of it. If there's been a prejudice, it would go, in fact it makes reference to subsection 16, subsection 2, the presiding officer must transmit the record of the proceedings to the registrar. I'm not going to read all parts of it, as provided for in section 303 of the Criminal Procedure Act, in which event the proceedings must be dealt with in terms of the procedure on review as provided for in section 304 of the Criminal Procedure Act. And then also subsection 3 then deals with the prejudice caused to any person. The presiding officer must continue or act in accordance order if there's an error has been committed in terms of age order. But the direct response is section 2, which would deal with review, should there be a kind of prejudice. As is the case with all of our criminal procedure and our criminal laws of the country. There's also the part, there could also be two other elements of defeating the ends of justice, because that is the point that has come up in the review application. But over and above that, it could also be considered contempt. So it's a range of mechanisms that we have in our current procedure as to what could happen.
Okay, no. When we vote, I'll take it. But it's fine. You can move. That was close 13 for you, colleagues, and close 14. Clause 15. Clause 16. I tried to argue on clause 17. Last time I tried to argue the summons that are given to. Maybe before I move out of the three clauses, not the fourth law, 13, 14, 16, and 15. People who determine the age of that child, people who ascertain. Why so many people, probation officer, the magistrate, court, and to make sure that we told all the deaths here, according to who was determined the illness.
Okay. I think we must just differentiate and point out that the probation officer doesn't make a determination. If you have a look at clause 13, it only makes an estimation, and it's only a court that can make an age determination. So that's why you have age estimation in clause 13, that the probation officer makes an estimation, and that estimation is then taken to court in the probation officer's assessment report, and in the court, it's either the inquiry magistrate or the preliminary inquiry, or to be the presiding officer of the Child Justice Court when there's trial. They use the information that's been given to them, the estimation that's been given to them by the probation officer, and they actually do a determination. So that's a more binding decision that's made at court level. So clause 13 deals with estimation. Clause 14 deals with determination in child justice courts and in preliminary inquiries, and clause 15 is also determination of age, but not in a child justice court or not at a preliminary inquiry.
Can we move? I was in clause 17, I just checked on the other clause. Clause 18? Are you doing all this, what you said you have to do under 18.4? Are you doing it? So the experience in some other places is not what appears. Maybe because of this, you do it. Are you doing it? So some other people, they don't, when you go through some places, some of the conduct by our police officers. Of course, I'm not rubbish, everybody with the same brush. Well, I think they're very good police officers out there who are doing so good, and they follow the all the rules and the order. So perfect. And I can't rubbish at all. But some of the shortcomings that we're seeing that are conducted or done by the police officers, especially when dealing with our shelter, it leaves much to desire. Are you doing all what you think you'll do here, or is there any training that we'll put in place to make sure that the police officers will follow exactly what all the requirements in terms of this process?
Okay, so most of this we are already doing. Our regulations that will be issued in terms of this legislation will tighten up our procedures, and our training will also strengthen that. But there will always be, I think, the odd police officer or the odd person that does not do what they should do, and for that we have disciplinary measures that will also be included in the orders and instructions.
Colleagues, there's an assurance. She's put it in up on the block. So you can quote her, but... Alright. Clause 19. How many years before 19?
Because you insisted successfully that parent or appropriate adult must be accompanied by guardian. So under 18 subsection 4, there is when handing a written notice to the child, parent or appropriate adult. We should be saying everywhere a similar provision is containing these words, then there should be guardian as well.
Could do a word search and try and pick it up in the book.
rabbis apply. What do you say, consequential? Consequential? I just play for a push button. Alright, thank you very much, Manjoski. We're just moving out of course 19 to course 20. That is the Honorable Max Floss. Honorable Max Floss, the transporter of people who are in between. Hey, I can still remember what he said. He still wants to pursue the argument, Honorable Max, about the Floss 20. Or you've been persuaded, or you're giving in, or you're giving up. Can I hear you, Honorable Mac? I want to move out of this loss knowing that they were speaking the same language.
Mac, I haven't been persuaded. I think I've accepted. I've been convinced.
Thank you, Chairperson.
read, if you read 24A with 4B, if we don't inform the 24, if within 24 hours we are not able to inform the probation officer, so there would have to be valid reasons for that. We must then submit a written report to the magistrate to explain why that couldn't be done, so that the magistrate can then make a decision or a ruling in terms of what must happen. So that is what is required of the police, and we would need to then go to court if it was, let's say, in the middle of the night when we arrested this child. The next morning we would need to go to court with our report. But that would not yet be within 24 hours. So we would detain the child, inform the parents, try to inform the probation officer, and if 24 hours runs out without us having informed, we then go to court. My concern would then be, what if it's now in the middle of the night and we can't find a magistrate to inform that magistrate, but the provision is for us to inform in writing. So we would then submit a report to the court. And the court must function and be able to take our report. So I think that's where I think, as we said, also needs to just come in terms of the responsibilities of the court once we, because our responsibility is to submit a report to the court.
The report must be submitted at the preliminary inquiry for the non-compliance as to why there's been that time period. And the reason why this clause was put in specifically is because of the times when you get, in fact, currently what happens is you do get the complaints either from probation officers or from staff. Probation officers can only respond when they know there's a child, and police must inform them that there is a child. And to prevent that falling through the crack issue, where one department blames each other or no one wants to really take responsibility, subsection 4B was created, so that where we find this may be happening on a constant, sort of more often than one can then intervene at a more systemic level. But you will see that each time that this happens, when you get to court at the preliminary inquiry, you then must claim, and we come up with a form which then ensures that accountability from each department moves on. So you don't get officials who would sometimes do take the opportunity of, you know, one official doesn't take responsibility. And this is really to close that gap. So we can then target who's the official. Because if you look at the end of 4B, it says as prescribed. And what we'll put in there in the prescribed form is the name of the official and a whole lot of details, so we can then determine who is not really doing their job. And you'll find that kind of provision on different processes where we've noticed in practice something falls through, and then you get nobody really taking responsibility. You can't get an answer from anyone. So you'll find those clauses throughout the different stages as you hand the child over in the business process from one department to another. So that's really the clause is there for the very purpose that you ask the question, what happened?
So the reporting can only be written. There's no verbal reporting in case of some immediate situation.
No, Chair, the reason for the written report is that there's no dispute. It's put on a form, and the presiding officer can then determine. And because it's there, the presiding officer, the preliminary inquiry, must also then ask those questions, and that form must be handed in, and the presiding officer then says, well, why was the child kept there? Why was no one informed? What happened in the situation? And then, of course, there could be, you know, depending on what's happening in the police station at the time, there could be reasons for it, but then it needs to be compelling reasons as to why that would be acceptable. And the presiding officer would then make a determination, was that acceptable or not?
That takes care of first, 21. Dog, they're too quiet for my liking. Dog, they're too quiet for my liking.
Very interesting. You will be interested if you know what I'm busy with. But maybe I'm just with this chairperson. I'm just debating something in connection with Mr. Negi. Meanwhile, so I think you will understand my. This is quite dog. Yeah, that is quite dog.
Make sure whatever dogs want, you can give him, you know. Water, juice, and everything, you know. please. Yeah, even lunch, if we'll be having this thing at lunch, dog must have some special today, you know. Yeah. Thanks, dog, for bringing that to our attention, I think. At least the people have been with us for the first 2 weeks, they know that they were working. I think the resource from Senegal here is that, no, you know what you said about this member. Just go in and see. Yeah, sit in. Okay, close 21. Can you bring our minds here, just that we move the same understanding? We when this kid is released in the care of the appropriate adults, the guardian, parents. What about the kids who don't have neither of what is said here? Say anything about it. You see that he or she deserves to be released because of those reasons that the social development also come in. Know that this is a secure care center because it's whatever facilities that Manyanda hasn't seen even one, don't have one. We don't have them in our area. But this kid has to be released, and unfortunately, doesn't have parents. Is there any record for this poor kid that has to be released?
What would happen in those circumstances, invariably, we're talking about police official now. The child will either be put into a child and youth care centre, or because the police only have to only deal with the child for the first 48 hours before the child gets to court, and if the child cannot be released into a parent or guardian because they're simply not one, the child will most probably land up in a child and youth care centre or even in a police cell, but that's only for the first 48 hours, and then the child goes to court, and then the court makes a determination after that.
In a police cell?
The provision is also made for police cell. Obviously, the bill is intended to encourage if the child has to be detained, to be detained in a child and youth care centre, but you use a police cell as a last resort.
Madam Pop, I don't mind hearing your voice again.
Thank you, sir. So 66.6 of the bill also makes provision, and this is now for the magistrate, but I think because of our existing monitoring structures on national and provincial level, we already have our systems in place where our civil society members helps us to assist and monitor the children in conflict with the law. And Section 66 of this Act specifically makes provision for where a child is not assisted by a parent or an appropriate adult and a child requests assistance, an independent observer may, in exceptional circumstances, be appointed by the presiding officer in a prescribed manner to assist the court. So the regulations will prescribe that there will be certain sets of people in local areas who can help the children, and I would think that would be our civil society partners as well as our local communities who know what the children are doing at the office.
Can I come in again? I've just seen in clause 21 that besides the release that I've just spoken about, a prosecutor can also authorise the release of the child on bail. That's for offences for Schedule 1 or Schedule 2 offences. So a prosecutor can authorise a police official to release the child on bail, and in fact, that's a further option.
After being released, where is the child going to land?
I think if I understand your question is that if the child doesn't have parents, if it transpires out of the assessment of the probation officer that there are no parents, both parents, according to the Children's Act, the child is still in need of care. And the case has to be converted to Children's Court Inquiry. And then proper placement then will follow whether the child has to be placed into a children's home or into foster parents. But the case is not going to continue as a normal court proceeding.
So that's only after we really proceeding, I think, with the first 48 hours, that will happen after the child goes to.
If there is nobody whatsoever, putting aside any other thing, why is the child not put in the custody of the chief of his area?
Yeah. No, that's a fair question. I mean, you know, you go to all the royal court of traditional leaders, you'll find that there's always it's a very big family. But some of the kids there are not biological children of the state pushing the area. Some of the people, some of the orphans, always they stay in our homes. We're taking care of them. We should have said that to say no, we're doing this. For example, can go to many of the traditional leaders' houses. You'll see what they're doing. They're taking care of some of the orphans. But here in this act, they don't say anything about the traditional leaders. They don't trust us. So when we can't really impose ourselves. Even the Justice Department don't trust us. What can we do?
Just also, I was about to ask you that if there's no foster care parent who can take care of that child, what would?
Yeah, there's a hand there from Umsetwa and Sharon.
I think the word appropriate adult involves a lot of people, but after the recommendation of a probation officer, of course, because we don't just want to place children, because people are available. It should be people who are able to look after those children. So that word appropriate adult involves even a ward counselor who's available within, if it's a township, and if it's a traditional, I mean, it's a rural area, it can be your host.
Yeah, Sherry?
Yeah, say that you answered the question that you asked earlier, if I may, which speaks about the guiding principle, every child should be treated in a manner which takes into account his or her cultural beliefs and values. The value system is such, then the response that we get again would fall right within that scenario. So it depends on the value system. So that's essential, certainly. I don't think it refers to categories of people, but if you look at the principles of restorative justice as well, the concept of restorative justice comes from our own customary practices. So it may not say caution, but the principle is there. Okay, if I may, sorry, what we could do is when we define, in terms of the regulations and prescriptions and in our training, we will include this as a point, that here are the categories of persons that could be considered. So we amplify further for presiding officers as to who would be most suitable or appropriate adult that we could be considered. So I would think if you get, depending on the cultural sensitivity about the presiding officer, which happens as we know in reality, if not such, then we must then pronounce in terms of our training who could be the person at all. So I think it's a valid point raised in terms of what we must put in the implementation of the goal.
Okay. I think I was going to give a practical example of children who are still children who on their first court appearance parents cannot be placed at all. But if they are linked or they have been linked to a street shelter before, they are placed into the care of the child and also in that street shelter until an appropriate adult is found. But if it's not found, still the child and also worker in that
the shelter plays the role of an appropriate adult. That's a practical example, that's the thing that I can think of at the moment.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe to add on the very same issue is that there is a provision that has been made in terms of Chapter 13 of the Children's Act in terms of the child and youth care facilities. That includes the children's home, place of safety, drop-in centers, shelters, and so on, which is inclusive of that. So we think that, you know, we will use the police station as the last resort in terms of placement. There is a provision that has been made now in terms of the Chapter 13 of the Children's Act that talks about what is a child and youth care facility. It's inclusive of all those elements. Thank you.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I think it's clear. If it will be, there will be on the implementation part of it, if it will be categorized or mention that we can also play a role. That is good. Can we move to clause 22? Just, I try to, well, I back my silence now. The other thing is I consulted here with Carol here. 3B, leave the child on his or her own recognition. What a difficult word. Usually responsibility, what it actually means here. I'm familiar with the term responsibility or is it the same, it's just maybe a fancy word that I don't I'm not aware of.
Yeah, it means that the child must fend for himself or herself.
Left to see him. Child must be responsible enough to look after himself.
Before I forget, there is fresh tea.
What is going to break? Let's just as a norm. Quietly walk nicely to that table. To enjoy the tea and the nice music and all that.
Yes, Warren?
Yes, I think I might want to just come back to you on that. I'm shooting from the hip now. I think that is a legal term that is used in certain circumstances. But perhaps you can have a look at the possibility of using the word responsibility. It might be more appropriate and say what is. I think let's have a look and see if we can't do that. Release the child on his or her own responsibility.
Chief over there, can we use sort of just one our postponing thing from state law advisors?
Sure, although I'm not involved in this bill, but the usual word is cognizance. And I think that is how it appears in the Criminal Procedure Act, not recognizance.
Yeah, I think we'll agree that Lawrence, go and look into this and see if you can make those necessary changes if you have to, based on what the Office of the Central Advisor say. Good. We're now on 22. I announced fresh tea. Clause 23. Clause 24. The same way that says there, on recognizance. On cognizance. The S there. Yeah, the S there. I don't think we need it, but go and look into it and see if you can change. I'm now putting if there are questions on clause 25. So
conditions and whatever when these children are released on bail. Last one, please. We had enough of this bill. I think we have to remove it from our table. We had enough of it. Too much now. Too much now. And some people complain that they are unable to spend some time with their families because of this bill. But you know what I'm going to do to them? That's what this bill. Clause 27. Any question at all, 28? I think here, Sat must address us on this one. Let them assure us. Because when we read of some of the things that are happening here, they will raise it the other day. The rates are taking place in ourselves. How safe are our kids in their custody? Can we get an assurance again from staff?
Thank you, Chief. The police current standing orders and instructions for the detention of both adults and children make provision already for everything that is included in this section. Again, as with the transport requirements, we would need to issue new instructions. We will make provision for sanctions so that if there is misconduct by police officers, we can act against that. We are already busy with the electronic detention management system that's part of the integrated justice system's information technology improvement, if I can call it that. And specifically to make provision for children in custody, we've put in place what we call early warning systems as part of that system. So that as the information is entered on that electronic cell register, so the moment a child is detained, for instance, longer than a prescribed period, that there's a warning that goes off. So, like, someone would get an email to say that this police station has had a child returned here, you need to follow up on that. So there's already provisions for us to actually look at detention of children in terms of that system to empower us to act very quickly if something does go wrong. But our instructions and our orders will not make provision for all of these issues. Not just for what we must do, but also for what must happen if we don't act appropriately.
I said Honourable Mayor, this is the Honourable Mayor's clause. We're going to pursue what you raised, because where boys are locked with girls, and where some demand to be locked with boys, because they've now changed something else. Let me hear you, Honourable Mayor, because this is your clause, again.
Thank you, Secretary. I thought about this, especially the sentence where you say boys must be held separately from girls. Yeah, I thought maybe we could just put in something there, just also accommodating the other, the gays, the lesbians, especially in putting a boy child into a cell and he's a gay with other boys, something might have happened to him. You know, as Arthur Brown also proclaimed, something happened to him. Couldn't we just maybe put something in there, a preventative measure? I think that would satisfy me to some extent, that we add they will be given, so that I'm sure they will be given some attention to it.
Or if this young boy would claim that now I've changed, I'm no more, but I want to be locked in with those guys. No comment.
Yeah, I was going to propose that we could state, even though it states so in the bill at the outset, we could put something like take into account their special vulnerabilities. Because, as we pointed out, people in the LGBTI community are not the only groups that are vulnerable. You could get persons who have physical disabilities, persons who have mental disabilities, and a range of other categories that you would find where vulnerability is a factor. And that is currently done through staff in terms of where they would identify it. But I think the instances that you raised need special attention. And if we put vulnerability, we will then in our training also address that. But also over and above that, where, you know, other types of when we're doing discussions with the different stakeholders to make that particular point. Because I think to go to each category, we're going to get every sector then say, I want to also be included. And sometimes every issue can't be prescribed in legislation, but you can catch it in the regulation or in the directive.
Good. It makes sense. We'll bring the formulation in there. We'll look at it. I wanted to create a visit by NN or NRFSM, NRC, but let me leave it. I raised it there, and I did get support from our state. I thought someone would come, will support me. Herman, I'm not supporting you on this one. I thought I'll get support. I thought the two of us, you know. But anyway.
Sorry, sir, I didn't follow you. Forgive me. 2018.
No, it's fine, Herman. No, I'll put it to come in there. Don't mind. Now, I was saying, this visit to these kids, where they can be visited by any other person, as long as this person gets permission from wherever. I'm not accepting any person. Any person, even though at the end you are qualifying it. But I don't like that formulation. But I can live with it. Lauren?
Just to give you time, to give you a bit of assurance there, I think that the words who, in terms of any law, you said it is qualified, and so it is. I think the law will be quite, the law will take care of it and make sure that only proper people that are entitled to be there do go there. I can think of examples, for instance, the inspecting judge, possibly somebody from a human rights commission that needs to go, and, or gender commission would be wanting to go and pay a visit and or conduct an investigation or something like that, but it would, it really would be in terms of law, and I think that would take care of any concern you might have.
Yeah, just from a practical point of view, the institutions that Lawrence refers to, when they do these cross checks to go into police cells or prison correctional facilities, they must have the appropriate card, which the police or the detention facilities know what that card looks like and will permit entry. So it's not just any person that would walk in there. They have to be somebody with a legally qualified to be in that, not a lawyer, legally qualified in terms of that law to go into that particular correctional facility or police cell. Well, in this case, it's talking about police cells. And may I just note that until now, the inspecting judge was only able to, because it was called the inspecting judge of prison, but only were not qualified. They would not actually qualify under this particular law. But that rule has been changed now, so that they, as Lawrence has pointed out, can now actually visit police cells. Because until they've amended that, they weren't able to visit police cells. I'm not sure if it's coming to effect, but it has been, in the time period for coming into effect, but it has already been sent from a waiver.
Let me organize the smart test. I'll come back to you and just.
Thank you. tangent there, but we've chatted about the previous hiccup. I agree that the with the last speaker and that the other person is specifically in broad terms, it is for the protection of the child. And insofar as the words preceding the any other person are not covered, so the other person would is brought, and it would ensure that any person who may legally visit the person can lay the claim, even if it's not mentioned in the opinion of the
Okay.
Chairperson, I just wanted to give a precise example of that the 8 assistant probation officers are doing spot checks in police cells, and they are not catered for in the names of people that are mentioned there at the assistant probation officers. Chairman, you didn't hear what I was saying. Yeah. So it really refers directly to also to them, your assistant probation officers.
The response still that I'm good at is listening. And I'm settled. I'm very good at listening. I have to say sitting from the beginning. Can we move to 29?
No, but can I move to 29?
Okay. If not, you have any input. I think we're going to amend it, as you said, to be amended accordingly. 29, that is, I'm not going to end up close. What's going to end up close is, the use sentence that's not good. Maybe that it will be built very soon. Just imagine Andrina so far away from from the guys to Andrina, you know, you can imagine. And from Pushpa Creek to Andrina. And from Manele to Andrina. Do you want to come in? Was your hand up or you're just greeting me?
We are just saying that we are improving as we are going. There are plans on place for all, we are catering for all the 9 provinces in terms of facilities. Additional one.
You know, why do I put it in some departments? Not social development. They are good at having plans. They have this work of plans. And they will plan for the next meeting. You know? The next meeting they'll go and sit and plan for the other meeting. Plan. Hey, that's what we did. It's like meetings. Mm-hmm. Some departments don't like this workshop. You know? To justify your expenditure. Having a workshop, after a workshop. Come 6 months down the line. What was the workshop all about? Talk about planning. Hey. Close 31. Close 32. Close 33. Bam, boom.
The risk of a child of absconding from the youth center, what do you do?
Yeah. The question is raised about the abscondment from whatever placement by this child. The question from Myanda, what do we do about that?
have heard of issue one and whatever I will do. Yeah, can any brave person respond to that question? Can any brave one respond to
it? Chair, can I perhaps just add something? Where it appears here, this is a list of factors. I'm not dealing, I think Ms. Nyanda is talking about the risk of absconding in general, and I might have a bit of difficulty responding to that, but in clause 33 G, this is just one of the factors that must be taken into account when a presiding officer is going to detain a child in a prison. It says before decision is made to detain a child in a prison, the presiding officer must consider recommendations relating to placement in the probation officer's report and any other evidence, including the risk of the child absconding. So if there is a risk of the child absconding from a child in youth care centre, that might be one of the considerations that the presiding officer should take into account. So, okay, if there is that risk, perhaps the child should go to prison. But I think your question goes broader. Is it broader than that? How does one deal with the risk of absconding?
Yeah. Think about it. When are you ready to respond? Babantul.
Thanks, Chair. About planning, you remind me of Lincoln, the former president of America, who said when giving 3 hours to chop a tree, you would spend 2 hours sharpening the axe.
Now there's this question from Mami, and you respond to it when you are ready. Can you go to source 1? No, we're in there too.
Can we dispense with it now, if that's okay?
No, don't.
As it pleases a bit.
No, you can approach. You can approach the bench. Okay, do you know this, Ekari?
We do have cases where children would abscond, and a lot of the times where there would be that absconsion, it usually is because the placement is incorrect. Because with the way some of the secure care facilities are organized, you would find that we also, in some of the secure care facilities, have some parts of it are place of safety. So place of safety is usually children who are in need of care, who have had nothing to do with the criminal justice system, but may not have parents and need to stay somewhere, and so social development provides that service. So you have different levels of security, because we don't want to also have many prisons for children, recognizing their special needs. So you would find when we have that absconsion, sometimes you would then, having first, because you would give the child the benefit of the doubt, you would put them in a particular place, taking into account now what type of offense, the size, considering what other children may be there. And of course, you want your children who are in a place of safety in the same place. They're cordoned off with the different types of security. So if you do have that, you would then take the child back to court for a different type of placement. Because you would realize by that time that child is not suitable for the environment, because the children who would be in that environment may not have committed as grave an offense. So some child, as an example, who may have been charged with sort of a heinous rape, example, of other children. He or she may be a 15-year-old, but has committed this offense against younger children. That child will not be suitable to go into the secure care. They would be placed appropriately where they could also be protected, be guarded against themselves and other children. So that's what would normally happen, because the reality is we would have that in certain cases. And if you look, and I would like to invite the committee to look at some of the secure care facilities that there are, because a lot of them have changed in terms of the blueprints that we currently have. And you will see the differences in the way correctional facilities and the prescript are to secure care facilities, and also for you to look at the 2-1-stop centers that we have in the country. It gives you a perspective of how, with the new facilities that are being built, what is taken into account. That gives you a sense of assurance, but also you could raise your own concerns, because there has similar provision came into this bill because of some of the challenges that we found in one of the one-stop centers. They came as a direct result of having committee members having seen what was there and coming up with a particular provision.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, so all of these clauses, I think, starting from was sanctioned up until 32. As they say in legal terms, let me put it to you. We preach restorative justice. We preach rehabilitation. But when it comes to placement, the first criteria we put is the availability, the security of the place, and nowhere do we align the sentence to rehabilitation or to get this child out as soon as possible back into the community where it belongs. So I see it lacking here. It is just based on each with the accommodation. And I'm looking at this, especially because yesterday we had most facilities are in the Western Cape. Right? We had the former reform schools and everything. So there's a lot of facilities in the Western Cape and few in the other provinces. Now, for instance, this child comes from Mpumalanga and is placed in the Western Cape. While he needs to engage with his family continuously, you are breaking that linkage. So which now comes first? As a child, do we now protect the child in rehabilitating him to get out as soon as possible, or are we just cutting that link? And that type of criteria, I don't see in the placement.
Can you look into that and see if you can respond?
I think, Chairperson, I think the member is referring to sentenced children. And I think at the moment we're only talking about children awaiting trial. And as far as we are concerned as the department, children shouldn't be removed far away from where they are for family reunification and reintegration. That's why the department is in the process of building more such facilities, because I think that's the challenge at the moment, that you've got facilities that are far away from where children are coming from. But for awaiting children are placed to where they are close to their family.
Yes, Sharon? No, we'll look to the external maker. We'll look into that. Just make a note of it there. Because even if. No, we'll look into that. Can you go to slot 34? Now, as we complained from the very beginning that we don't have enough supervision officers. I wonder if we will be able to handle at lot 4-3 as specified. Because I don't want some students to say no sandwich because we are few. We don't have enough manpower. I know you have made an undertaking that you will make up even this assessment will take place there. Within the given period, I don't think it's cheap. But if you as you are, then I wonder if we'll be able to do it. Can a brave one put his or her neck on the block to say, yes, I want to do it just as it is appearing in the clock here in 34-3. I want a brave one, yes, because I'm busy about it.
As usual, I will try to put my head on the block in terms of saying that, you know, we currently what we are doing in terms of the number of probation officers, as we have clustered them,
the way we are dealing with all the courts. I have indicated previously that, you know, we are dealing with so many things here. We have 299 periodical courts and 388 regional courts and 88 high courts with only 484 probation officers and 264 assistant probation officers. But for now, what we have indicated, we have already planned for with all the provinces, we have additional 484 that we want to add. And the total number of assistant probation officers, as we have alluded in the department, that will be having additional 772 assistant probation officers to be able to carry the mandate as the Act will be requiring us to do. Thank you.
Chair, I was just trying to find a piece of statistic of ours into context. The number of children that enter into the criminal justice system, I think of the children that we have in the country, it's just 1% of the entire population of children in our country that enter the criminal justice system. So what is to put the number of children in the criminal justice system in context? Secondly, of the numbers of children that we currently have in terms of managing and analyzing the trends that we have, the numbers of children in the category under 10 is very, very low. We very rarely get the numbers of children under 10 and certainly under 7, or as soon as they're under 7, there's a completely different process through which they're managed. We find the increase of the numbers of children entering the criminal justice system only from the years 14. 14, it starts rising to 15, 16, 16 to about under 18 as the highest numbers of children that we have. So even under children under 14, from as far as 10, it's considerably less significant than the numbers that you find over 14. So when one looks at that provision, which suggests what you do with the children and they need to be assessed, the numbers are not that great in terms of just assuring you. Where the children need a care, of course, they go to a completely different process. And usually, in practice at the moment, as soon as the police identify, if you look at the numbers of children that enter, is that one of the unfortunate consequences of our legal system at large is that the first point of entry for services is usually upon arrest and discharge. So if the police find you, the first time you get any access to service, actually, you actually get found by a police officer, which is not the way it ought to be. But as soon as that happens, as you see, within 48 hours, because of the intervention of the police, South African Police Services, the number of children entering in the system reduces by 50%, simply because they moved out of the system. They all then don't get processed, and as you move across from the awaiting trial and moving into the business process of court, etc., you find the number dwindling completely. And the numbers that actually go into trial reduces so significantly to that first 48-hour period. And you'll see a provision in this bill, I can't remember exactly the section number, but the provision in this bill, and what there were many concerns raised about it, what happens to those children who've been arrested and charged, and have reduced within that 48-hour period, because the idea is not to now say, sorry, that's somebody else's problem. At the end of the day, they're children of our country. What happens to it? There's a provision here, which we're also going to pick up in terms of the 96, section 96, to say, where do they go? So you'll find that we've got the prescript in terms of the prescribed regulation to find out what happens to them. Do they go into the social system? Whereas now, we don't capture that information.
I think we're done with closing four, with all those things, those assurances from the department. I think closing five is fine. The papers for the assessment, I think it's fine. This thing, closing six as well, I think it's fine. And closing seven. Clause 38, as was created, consequential, a guardian will be added the consequential sharing. You want to ask anything for Lisa before I move to 39? Probation officers on 39, their duty is to do this and that and that. And even to come into a house, even when you're in a quality time for family, they can come at any time to ask them. Monitor, to do whatever. So these people are so lucky and fortunate, because we said that even if they invade on our privacy, they are doing their duty as outlined by the court or the department or by whoever. Any question clause 39 before I move to block 40? Yes, any questions is close there. About the report on close forces here. Let's now deal with diversions in close 41, chapter 6. We have many questions in our previous engagement. I don't think of questions now. The permission will tell me smoothly zoom to 42. 42, it looks so innocent. We can nicely maneuver and jump to code 43. Code 43 as well. I think they've asked many questions to this program. The 48-hour period is there as well, it's short, but some things were done within that given period. Clause 44, where I queried that when they said the assessment, the preliminary inquiry can continue, may proceed in the absence of the child's parent and appropriate adult. Guardian of the LSA, wherever it appears. I'm now on those 44.4. That's where I'm going to have those additions I'm going to there. From line 45, I don't know. That's where I'm going to add those other things. As I create clause 45, the confidentiality of information finished at the preliminary inquiry. We know that's the risk. Close 46. It's here. Close 47. The magistrate who sits in the inquiry cannot be expected to sit again in the normal court process. Yeah. 48. Let's talk about these things. I think we have enough of them now. We can move to clause 49. Clause 50. on the objectives of divestments, I think the reasons are clear. I don't think we can spend much time on them again. The consideration of divestment on top 62, on what must be considered when they divest, I think. You remember that yours truly questioned the delegation of powers by the DCP, who cannot further delegate the powers. If it's not well, things will have to stand, regardless of whether or not it's in Serena Day, who are so capable. So they are not trusted in some of these things, so can't delegate power. Because they might further delegate power to other people. So no delegation of power here. I'm on clause 42.3D on page 31 up there. Now, we're going to that clause now. I can claim to all these clauses, but I think I'm not the only one. What else was in this clause 53? That's where we consider that the name. So that will make, yes, we will make one of them, one of those who complain. Namia and I will complain that the quality is high. 12 orders there. Compulsory school attendance order. I will fine with it. A family time order. That's why I'm having a crime. Good behavior order. That one. Now we're pushing our luck. Now, can you address us on E, the 3E, and just give examples where it's hard to give an order to report to someone. The child has been given an order to report to someone. So give examples of how this is going to be done and under which circumstances. Just to refresh our mind. Can someone talk to us about it? 53E. Yes,
Chairperson, if members know what correctional supervision is all about, that an individual has to report to a correctional officer on certain times, this is similar to that. Well, the assistant probation officer and the probation officer are the people that the child will be reporting to on a certain time that has been determined by the probation officer and the family.
Well said. I went out of home of 11-year-old, for example, of 11-year-old.
Chairperson, those 11-year-olds are the ones that you are saying have committed horrendous offenses. And they don't stay at home, that's a fact. Even if you can coin that to the family order, where they have to be at home on specific days, where they sleep with their parents. There's a program that the department is doing, it's called home-based supervision. It's similar to the to correctional supervision. It has all those orders that I mentioned, where child has to report to a probation officer on certain times.
Mm. Now, the reason behind it is clear, we know, but I'm looking at the child who's 11, 12 or so, who must go and report the system. And mind you, we're talking of the officers who don't even have the supervision office. But no, let's leave it for a lark and just pray that the Almighty God at least help us so that this can happen. Let us pray. Maybe it could happen one day. Can we move?
Chair was going to say, I never said we could move, but maybe one last sentence if that's fine. One has to take into account that when the probation officer makes the recommendation of the appropriate diversion order, they will determine whether the child is able to come and report, or whether they themselves can go and monitor the child wherever they are. What we currently have at the moment is unregulated diversion services with social development program, with the accreditation, with the kind of framework that they've put into place. It's been done purely on the basis of policy. We've not had legislation, regulations, diversion services. It's the first time in this bill that we've now regulated it. So you could have all kinds of diversion programs which have not always been monitored. The framework that social development has come up with now, which is still on the policy level, is to regulate and try and create some sort of uniformity. So when you look at these different options over here, they really are options, and they have to be determined against the backdrop of the suitability of the child, the nature of the offense, the family environment, and also the services that can be provided by those probation officers. So if you've got a child in Uppington, and if you just look at the Northern Cape and the way that place is organized in terms of distances, and I use that because it's the most extreme in our country, you're not going to ask that probation officer from the one city to go to the other one and monitor, because that's not a suitable option. So family time, and also looking at the dysfunctionality of that family, will not be the option. It will only be used where that is the most suitable option. If it is, and we find in our monitoring and our accreditation process, because if you recall section 56, looks at us coming up with appropriate policy framework, and also looking at the register for the diversion services, and also the kind of program, we will then itemize what is appropriate or not. And where we find that an order has been given, you know, the one that was raised several occasions with concern, family time, is given to a family or child where this is not being suitable, that is what the diversion register will tell us. We will also then intervene, so why are people using this for this particular situation? So just some sense of what services and provisions are available, those would have to be, and currently it is taken into account. So what would work in the city centre of Stanton and Alexandra is not going to be the same type of option, and so forth as we go throughout the country.
When voting, I was supposed something, but they were well attended. And thank you for doing that. I'm now on 64. 65. Monitoring of compliance with the diversion order. In a case where the probation officer fails to his job or her job, what must happen? Because we know if the child can comply with the order, we know what must happen. If probation officers don't do what are expected to, is there anything that says we're working to do something about it? What is it?
Clause 57.3, Chair.
Okay. sorry about that, that in trouble.
The appropriate authority in order to take necessary action. That's where the person is in employer of the state. Within the person, the probation officer is not employer of the state. The Chief Social Development must be notified.
Clause 58.
Thank you. In 58.3, if it's found that the failure of the is not due to the child's fault, I just need some clarity on this. If the fault is that of family or anyone responsible for that child, and it is deliberately done to keep that child from. And if it is deliberate, what happens to that person? Will he be also criminally pursued? If it is the parents or the appropriate adult in which kind of which responsibility that child is.
Doesn't specifically say anything about that, but I should imagine that that parent, appropriate adult, could be dealt with for contempt of court. That's the way we use it. It doesn't need to be regulated specifically in the law.
Clause 59. Clause 61. As we'll be getting those options there from our liable dedicated wonderful calculated dynamic marvelous cool excellent official. That's just the one comment. No, I'm recording. All this is recorded. Clause 63. But he's not here. The best interest of the child or the best interest of the community. I wonder if he mandated anyone to talk to this authority. In the best interest of the child, in the best interest of the community. The question was who determines this is the best? Whatever is happening within the best of A or B. In the best interest of A or B. And I think it's clear, I can move to clause 64. 65. 66. 67. Clause 68. Clause 69. We are now in the sentence chapter of spiritual sentence. The objectives of sentences and factors to be considered when we hold those sentences. Clause 70.
Mac in terms of the sentencing and restorative aspects, they covered here in terms of objectives of sentencing. And also just on that earlier point that was raised, if you through, say, by placing increased emphasis on the effective rehabilitation and reintegration of children, which is also further amplified in terms of the object of the act. Those principles are there. They're just now more stressed, if one could use this, or further emphasized in the objectives of sentencing. So that the principle of restorative justice goes through the system, it goes through all of the business processes, and even if it's not captured in a particular, which it is, in a particular chapter or business process of the criminal justice system, the catch-all would be looking at the spirit and object of the particular piece of legislation, which is at the outset.
Thank you. That is half of what I was concerned about. That is the sentencing part. But those, as was stated, you know, I also mean, if you are waiting trial, there must be some education, because just for you to be there, there's something with them. And even as you alluded to, there are those, even if they come into the system, when it comes to sentencing, there are a few. So what happens to all of them to prevent them coming back or to be in that situation again?
If I may, so you said half, the other half, if I could raise with you over lunchtime, and then if you're not satisfied, we'll raise it when we come back. Because those principles are there. And one has to look at the way the bill is organized. You've got stages. And through each of the stages, the grain of restorative justice applies. And just in terms of practice, you will also note that we've now started increasing, because we didn't have educational programs for waiting trial children. The phenomenon of waiting trial children is really a challenging one, because some children would stay for 48 hours, some would stay for 1 week, some would stay for 2 weeks, some would go up to 3 to 9 months. So you can't have a one-size-fits-all training program. So one has to look at the individual type of situation, and then one has to think about, now, do we put an education program for each child for 4 hours, 6 hours? It's quite a challenging aspect, but we have already, through social development and Department of Correctional Services, started for the first time in our country, formalized education programs for children awaiting trial and their criteria as to how we manage that. But I think those concerns have been put in place throughout, and also we've increased our training programs with the child justice aspect, which is what I think you're pointing out, is how do you now ensure that the reoffending doesn't happen, or that there's some sense of accountability. That will come through in the training directive.
Can I institute legal civil claims? Can I institute civil claims against parents of this child if, because of whatever I suffered, whatever.
In terms of legal advice now, yes, of course, that would be, that is something that can be considered, but the way our courts operate, not the same legal system that you would find. I think the most famous one is that of the OJ trial, where criminal charges were eventually, I think in that trial, he was not guilty, but then there were civil claims against him and his estate, as it were. In our country, with the way we are organized in terms of the legal system, if there's been some sort of compensation paid out here in terms of the criminal matter, you won't necessarily be able to institute. The provisions are there in civil process, but you won't necessarily be able to claim on the same offense if it has already been taken care of here. You'll come up with you've got a very smart lawyer to come up with different kinds of claims to institute action again. So it would depend, I think each case would come on its own merits, but our legal system is so different in that sense. But if it's been compensated for here, it would depend then on a range of aspects that would need to be considered.
Can you give me the answer, Sharon?
I'm saying if there has been claims, if under the compensation here, in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, where there's a victim's compensation section, I can't remember. whole range of factors. That is why I said each case would come on its own merit. You could raise it in a civil action, but it would depend. So yes, technically there is, but if there's been some payment under compensation fund, which provision is in our law, its implementation may be assessed and challenging, but there is that provision. If there's been payment made, you won't necessarily be successful on your civil action. It also depends, as I say, on how you have formulated your civil case.
Well, I mean, if I become physically challenged because of the kind of brutality that I was met on me by this child, and the child under age, she or he is sentenced to say whatever, here I am physically challenged because of that. The question is, can I institute legal same again. The parent or the child, of course, I won't get anything from against the parent of the child. That's what I got what we were going to do. But the fact that I need a direct, categoric, unambiguous response.
Incidentally, to the matter, technically, yes, you would be able to institute the claim for civil action. But he'd be successful enough to be the issue. Because, I mean, just from a legal point of view, if you just put your claim against somebody who has no money, it's not going to take you anywhere. So, I think there would be different, it would really depend on the merit. And then, under compensation fund, you could then ask for whatever damages would have been claimed, and it would be dependent on the court to look at the physical, I mean, the evidence that comes before them. And that is where the victim impact statement comes into play. So a lot would depend on the compensation fund. And that is why I say that is the challenges we have as to how that is managed.
Okay,
I just wanted to add to that the claim is the summary against the child, not against the parent. It may be assisted by the parent because of the capacity, the legal capacity of the child.
So what my eyes will change quite, I thought you would come to my rescue. I'm getting free legal service from Serene. That's why sometimes it's diluted because she's aware that I'm not going to pay. Can we move?
Chairperson, the answers given is absolutely correct. It's very complicated. It all depends on the situation, the circumstances of each and every case. And one, you were given an exact example, and then one must, you know, analyze everything. From your point of view and from the other side, you must also listen to the other side as well. So I think that the answer given is absolutely on target. So that's the reason why I kept quiet. Thank you, Chief.
Now let me give a practical example. Mr. Bush lawyer's talk. If this child is in a security case center, yeah? That will say he's under the state. He escapes and he does this. Can I claim from the state? The state has money.
And that's the Carmichael case. Mm-hmm. I really feel like my legal credibility has been challenged. And thank you, Leonard, colleague, for concurring with me on the other point. But if it's the state's responsibility and does not take appropriate action, that is why the different reports from the probation officer who didn't give the right type of assessment. Or also, could it just happen that nobody could detect that there was such a serious problem? It would definitely then be a responsibility of the state, but one would have to check for negligence. If all reasonable measures were taken and something could not have been detected, then of course one would then have to check that, because it comes under the delictual action also of, vicarious liability of the state. It really depends on that. But the Carmichael case is one of those that's a definitive of the state made a pronouncement and the woman was subsequently injured as a result and she claimed against the government. So that would be a very different scenario to the one that was raised by the chair. Have I passed my question?
From the from the 13th to the 17th stop. We'll be sitting at JFC of next month. All the appointing judges, myself and Dr. Van Heerden, we are in the JFC of our first judges. I'm just making my notes. So, those who seem not to be nice to me, will show. Floor 71. Floor 72. I like this one, the community based center. Like that. Under reproductive justice. Clause 74. Okay. Clause 75. I'm doing this because I want to meet some other people. I don't want to see them after 12 o'clock. I want to see them. Because they're going to wait for lunch. They can do what I'm going to give them some much. I don't want to see them. We'll talk about this at length. Can we move to Clause 77? Child who is 14 cannot be sent. Cannot be given an imprisonment sentence. I don't know why. And the Department of Correctional Services don't want these people in their centers anymore. Clause 78. Clause 79. Similarly, important. Clause 8. Legal rep. Yes, sir.
Previous meeting, I raised some issues and I indicated that I would maybe come with some amendments. Can I just, Section 81. My concern, Chairperson, let me make that clear, is not B, C, D, or E. My concern is with A. To make a legal representative liable or subject to disciplinary action for maybe not complying completely to A is to me not acceptable. I would say that let's separate 1A or let's take A out and link it with 1. And then come with B, C, D, and E in a different section. Let me just give you what I have in mind. I would say that the legal representative representing a child must allow the child to take out the A, must allow the child as far as reasonably possible to give independent instructions concerning the case. Then I would go and say maybe it can be more elegantly formulated. Subsection 2, then a legal representative must further, and then B becomes A, and it goes on like that. Then chairperson and number 2 will then become number 3. And let me just finish with this clause, because I've also had a difficulty, you will remember, concerning the notifying of where an advocate transgresses then, in my opinion, then B, C, D, and E, which will then change. What I would say there is that it states as it is B, 1, 2, and 3, the case of an advocate, the controlling body of which the advocate is a member, and then I consider the chairperson, or if such an advocate does not belong to any controlling body, notify the law society. In one above means the attorney's central the attorney act to which the instructing attorney belongs. Chairperson, it happens that independent advocates who do not belong to any society act without any instructing attorney. That is the danger, Chairperson. So if as long as an advocate acts on the instructions of an attorney, and the whole compensation goes also through the attorney, then I think that's the way in which you can discipline those advocates who operate without any the intervention of any attorney. And once a law society is being informed about such an attorney who does not comply with what I indicated here, B, C, D, and E, which will then change, then I can assure you that advocate is going to have a really difficult time to get instructions from attorneys in that particular area. Chairperson, my most important one is the A section 1 and 2, as I indicated. And then this other one, I think, maybe can also, Chairperson, that's what it's called, the department maybe to consider and accept or change or just reject. I'm not going to make any further song and dance about this.
For that, doctor, I'm going to make a day and say, that is important, going to look into that, because I'm also not comfortable with the child giving independent instructions. I mean, I don't want the child here. If can be framed the other way around, I don't think the child can be able to give an instruction to me. Go and look into this, look into what the doctor is proposing, come with options. If those options might be problematic, we might resort to this provision as it stands. But when looking into that, let us look at the responses now. Go and consider all those options. Clause 81. It's clear. 82. 83. 84. 85 is clear. 86, revision bail, pending review or appeal, clear. Record of conviction and evidence on chapter 13, that is clause 87 for you. I raised a question under the clause. They said mention this record they'll find based on the crime that they committed in terms of the schedule. If crimes under schedule 1 after 5 years, those records that they are found after 5 years, yes. If it's under Schedule 2, those crimes can be expunged after 10 years. I remember I got some explanation to it, even though I was not that much comfortable. But I can live with it, but I'll consult also and see if I'll bring any proposal to it. But for now, I don't have any concrete proposal. We might stay with it as is, or we might change it, but by the way, the question was who must apply, or is it automatic that immediately after this period, the record is expunged, or the
child must apply to the DG so that those records be expunged. Yeah, well, yes. Any questions to this one, colleague? 37. We move. The department will address us on this one tomorrow morning when we vote on the bill. Clause 88. The one-stop child justice center. How many do we have in the country? Only two. Really? In terms of the progression plans.
If you recall, the bill came into Parliament in 2002, and at the time, the two were pilot projects. Subsequently, the bill was off the table. So the thinking at the time was, let's wait until the bill comes back. Also, if you recall from the Law Reform Commission, what we have noted is that when they proposed the one-stop centre, which is a very good concept in that it becomes more resourceful and productive, we found that the Law Reform Commission suggested that we proclaim five magisterial jurisdictions to use one centre. When the proclamation was done for these two, it was just one magisterial district that was proclaimed as the seat of court. So it became rather unproductive from a finance point of view. What we subsequently then decided is to use the secure care facilities, and that's a discussion that we're currently having, which in principle has already been agreed to by the two departments. And if you look at the way this is drafted, it says under Section 89(1), the cabinet member responsible may establish centres to be known as one-stop child justice centres, and that each cabinet member is responsible for the provision of resources and services. So whilst this was under the guardianship in the new sense of the Department of Justice, what we have noted is that with the two centres, and we've commissioned evaluations of it, the one is managed by the Department of Justice and is very adversarial in the way it's managed. The other one, which is managed by the Department of Social Development, is much more therapeutic in its response to how it manages children. So we have then decided, as a result of the centres being up and running for some period of time, that the best way for us to use our resources, considering that each of these two centres cost us, each one cost us $20 million, Social Development has already secured a budget for the additional rollout over and above the current 31 centres and additional 20 centres. What we would then do is, which discussion we're currently in process with, is proclaim a seat of court in each one of these secure care centres. So instead of building a new one-stop centre, we could either use the term, because if you look at the Children's Act, the term child and youth care centre is the definition. This would easily form and be very compatible that each child and youth care centre could become a one-stop centre where all the services are rendered there. If you look at Section 89 sub 4 and what each child justice court or one-stop centre must have, takes into account current provisions that secure care facilities currently have. We would then need to include tax facility in there, as you would see the precept of a one-stop centre. So the intention initially was to roll out 14 altogether. We rolled out only two and stopped the 14. But with the envisaged process, we'll probably now have 50 centres as opposed to 14. It's far cheaper because we've already got the facilities for 30 secure care. And with the additional 20, which budget has already been allocated, it would be far more productive and make much more business sense for us as the country in terms of allocation of resources. If you look at 20 million times 14, the cost of that, as opposed to the 30 centres we have in existence, becomes far cheaper. In fact, that this was the cost driver of this particular bill. It actually made this one of the most expensive bills in terms of being processed. But having changed this around, it actually has brought the cost down, whilst it brought more, will bring more services to all of us. Because all it would require is our personnel move to the different secure care facilities and some refurbishment. It's far less than the 200
can we ask the Department of Social Development? Because if you look at it, according to the official here, to say this project will be running in 2010. I was still going to follow this public works arrangement to say when we want to build something, then it's still going via the public works. I'm saying this because when we are going around provinces, each and every department, whenever you are asking about the facility, they think I will point at a public work. Now I'm asking this because we'll be told here it will be running this and this. Come 2010 and then public works, it has not done this. We could not have this because of public works. Now, are we going to see any improvement in that working relationship with public? Because we don't want when we go there and get the same complaint, public works is not doing one, two, three, public works is not doing one, two, three. We want to find out whether they are going to have a new way of doing things instead of buying public works furniture.
Yeah. Very much for that.
Thank you, Chair. Much as we might not be in the business of the building section, but rendering services to children, the issues that have been done, that our response is that we work with closely with public works. The sites have been identified through the municipalities, but what I can give as a practical example, what we have already, we are not talking in terms of plans, but what is in existence. Northwest is a practical place where we have already two secure care facilities, which is inclusive, which are functioning as a one-stop child assistance center, where there is a seat of court, there is SAPS is included, health is included in one facility. There are three facilities there. The third one, which is being built in Rustenburg with a capacity of 120, is also the same principle that we are seeing. That's the reason why we are saying when we are in the next, the 22 that we are anticipating, that we are in the process of building. In KZN, for example, they have gone the route of having a triple P, the private-public partnership issue, in terms of their approach to that. In fact, because we have to work closely with the municipality in terms of acquiring the land and sites and so on. But we have already done those preparatory issues have already been, those phases have been passed already. Thank you.
I tried to argue, but my argument was shut down. Clause 95, the meeting of the Central Committee. I was surprised because I'm bringing a proposal for Clause 96. Clause 97. Clause 98, Clause 99,
1200. This brings us to the deliberations on this bill. So this afternoon we'll give a space to the department to go and draft those amendments and to look into all those proposals that were made by members. And if they feel in their scrutiny they have discovered or identify some other provisions that must be brought to our attention, feel free to do that. As I said, tomorrow we'll be voting on the bill, voting clause by clause. And the committee will, I can assure you that the committee will pass the bill tomorrow with those amendments. But that will depend how we are going to look at me if you bring this long face. I'm going to make a mistake. But yeah. But tomorrow, Lauren.
You mentioned now that you'd like the department to address tomorrow on floors 87. Is it possible just to give us an idea of what you want to address on so that we can prepare that on the expungement provisions?
Okay, now the question here was are we sure that are we comfortable that all the offences under Schedule 1 some of the, I know that serious that some people, there are some of the offences under Schedule 1 that some of us are very serious. But there are those in Schedule 2, of course, some of them really. When you look at them, you might feel that they belong to Schedule 1. But they can't change that now. I want your opinion on that one, because I was checking at some of the offences. Without going straight into them, I don't know, but maybe we should leave it. Maybe we should leave it. Maybe let's leave it. Even though I wanted to bring some proposals to this one, but maybe I can make you a day and say, let's leave it. But I'll address you about it tomorrow. I'll address you on another. If I'm able to persuade you, you might put in something, you know, in those draft amendments. Yes, on that note, the department will come back to us tomorrow morning. We're meeting at 9. It's the same venue about child justice. Now, when we come back from lunch this afternoon, there's only one item that the sub-department will talk to us about. We made some proposals in the second half of the day. Don't take us in 20 minutes. We'll expose of it. So I'll go and draft that. When we come with the with it Monday, at Tuesday on the 9th, at least we'll clear that day. Because our next meeting in terms of that, I'll talk about it when we come back. But everybody in this room, you are invited to, today I am saying it with without any fear or any whatever, that yes, you are invited to come and enjoy our juicy, delicious, sumptuous lunch at the restaurant, Old Assembly restaurant down there. It's a sitting lunch. You won't forget this. If those are cameras, just bring your cameras and shoot and see the kind of food we're eating. There's a day for lunch. Let's come back at 2.